Hello, you are listening to Leeds Student Radio with me, your host Matt, and a very warm welcome to you for listening into A Glimpse of China. Now, last week was our first show and we discussed the Chinese economy. We had a student in who is studying in the business school here at Leeds University. We sort of mentioned the reasons why the Chinese economy has grown so quickly since the 1980s. Particularly focusing on the effects of the opening up to the West, and that's encouraged a lot of international trade. We also looked at how economic growth has affected the lives of Chinese people, so mentioning that they're able to live very comfortably with a nice flat, fashionable gadgets and fashionable clothes, children are able to get a good education, some of them are able to afford a car as well. But we also mentioned some of the negative consequences of the economic development that they've had, particularly the widening in the gap between the rich and the poor, and also the pollution that has come as a result of increased industrialization. We also talked about the recent economic slowdown and the reasons for that, but finally concluded that China does have a bright future in spite of this. So that was last week. Now this week we're actually going to be talking about the Chinese language. And there are plenty of students who do degrees in Chinese at the University of Leeds, and we are delighted to welcome two of them here today.
This is an exclusive interview from Leeds Student Radio.
So our first guest today is Clara. Now Clara is from Germany. She's studying Chinese and international relations, and she has spent a year in Shanghai. So hello to you, Clara. How are you today?
Hiya, how are you?
I'm very well. So just to get to know you a little bit better, and I'm sure you're probably fed up of being asked this sort of question, but so what sort of made you want to study Chinese?
It is true. A lot of people ask me why do I choose to study Chinese? Because it's thought to be such a difficult language. But to be honest, I already started to study Chinese in school because I had the choice between Italian and Chinese. And I just thought it was incredibly different to everything I've ever learned before, because in school I've already done lots of Romanic languages. And to be honest, I was just scared I might get confused if I also did Italian. And Chinese just had this really nice attraction, because it doesn't really have an alphabet, as everyone knows. It's got characters. It conveys a completely different meaning, and I was just really curious to find out what it was about and how to study that.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. So yeah, as everyone knows, Chinese does have a very, very different script to English and all Romance languages, really, and also a very, very different way of speaking. And to be honest, it's just an entirely different world, really, isn't it, over there in China?
Definitely.
So based on your experience in China, what is the aspect that you would say you found the most different or the most surprising about life in China?
Well, the most obvious thing that struck me when I got there, obviously, is the sheer different scale of things. It's just so much bigger than you could ever imagine. There's so many people everywhere. And it's just like bridges or buildings, you would not think it was possible unless you actually went there and lived there. Also, I found it quite interesting how people kind of live together, because it is a huge difference if you know someone or if you don't know someone, because people who you don't know, you don't really care for, which unfortunately becomes obvious in traffic accidents, or just if you ever get into contact with people on the road, it's just, it doesn't really seem like there's a lot of compassion going on, because everyone's kind of busy keeping their lives together and thinking of their families and friends first.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing about the big cities in China, really. It's sort of everybody is so kind of kept busy with the work and with their lives in general that they can sort of kind of lose the compassion that they have for other people. And that is quite a big problem in China nowadays, where the kind of the pace of life is increasing and people's work are getting busier and busier, and there's sort of an increasing sort of desire to earn money. And that is some of this kind of consequences that that can kind of bring. And you mentioned the scale of it as well. I mean, some of the cities in China, particularly Shanghai, where you were, the amount of people there, the population there is just absolutely enormous and on a kind of unimaginable scale for people from the West. In Shanghai, we're talking, in the one city of Shanghai, we're talking about a population of 40% of the whole of the UK. It is quite an incredible scale.
And apparently, I've heard of statistics that on just Pudong, the island where the skyscrapers are, like the skyline that everyone knows about Shanghai, in Pudong alone, which is like a half island, it's got half of the cranes of the world because they're still constructing it, and it's actually like sinking.
Yeah, it
because
is.
Of the weight.
It is absolutely incredible to think about it, isn't it? Really, the amount of construction that goes over there. And the sort of the speed that they do everything at as well, you know, skyscrapers going up in a couple of weeks and things like that. It really is incredible. So as I mentioned earlier, today's show is going to be about the Chinese language. Now, Chinese, you may or may not know, it is the most widely spoken language in the world. It is the official language of the whole of mainland China. We're talking about Mandarin Chinese here. Cantonese is a dialect which has some similarities, originated from Guangdong province in the south of China, and is now one of the two official languages of Hong Kong. But today we're going to be focusing on Mandarin, which is the official language of the mainland China and also Taiwan. So we sort of, when we think about Chinese, we sort of probably think about characters and a lot of squiggles and sort of pictures maybe. And a lot of people might sort of think, how on earth can anybody understand, let alone write that kind of thing? So, I mean, a few questions that foreigners might ask about the Chinese language. And Clara, if you wouldn't mind answering these kind of typical questions. So sort of one question that might be asked is, how many letters are there in the Chinese alphabet?
Well, there aren't any letters. The Chinese language is made of characters, and every character kind of has one part that's composed of different radicals, which are like little parts of the character. And there's one part that conveys kind of the meaning, and one part that does give you a hint how to pronounce it if you're lucky. But of course, there are also exceptions of the rules. And there are around 80,000 characters. We can only assume that because no one really knows. There's you can make up new words and characters as you go along, kind of. You had to evolve because I don't know if you know, but the Chinese language was kind of, it came into existence more than 2,000 years ago, and they didn't have computers back then, for example, whereas nowadays you just have to, computers are in everyone's everyday's lives. So they had to create with what they already had. So a computer, for example, is called an electrical brain, which I found just really creative, to be honest. You only need 4,000 characters to kind of get along. The educated Chinese tend to know 3,500 to 4,500 characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is very interesting to think that the characters all have their own meaning. It is not just a sound, it's a whole meaning altogether. So you mentioned one there, and another one might be a kind of a word for an aeroplane. So you've got the character to fly and a machine together. So put together, they are a flying machine. So, I mean, you talked about the thousands of characters that you have to know to be proficient. You kind of said you only have to know around 4,000 to get by. Well, I mean, 4,000 to most people out there would sound like quite a lot. So, I mean, how can you learn that many characters?
There's not really a way around it. You just have to sit down and write them out there and just hope that they kind of sink in. And as you process in your degree, as you go on, it just makes it becomes easier to recognize, to read characters, and to also remember how to write them just by practice.
Yeah, so it's just a kind of process of keeping going with it and persisting and things, Also, I think thinking up stories to kind of remember them, you know, what does each component of the character look like? I remember when I was first learning Chinese, the character for paper, to me, the right-hand side of it looked like an elephant. And then I was told that the radical on the left-hand side meant silk. So the way I remembered that was that paper was an elephant made of silk, which may sound a bit strange, but it worked for me. And also some of the characters actually kind of look like what they mean as well, which helps. Like an umbrella, if you look at that sort of character, it does actually look like an umbrella. So thank you very much, Clara. Now, in our studio today, we have another guest as well. So our second guest is Niall. He's British and he studies Chinese and Japanese here at Leeds University. So he's spent half a year in Japan and half a year in China. So how are you today, Niall?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, as I said, you are studying Chinese and Japanese, which to me sounds like quite a nightmare. And
It's a struggle.
I'm sure to many of you listening out there, it seems like quite a nightmare as well. Now, I mean, one thing that you may say, or some Westerners may say, is that Chinese and Japanese look like fairly similar languages. To what extent would you say that they are similar or different?
I'd say visually, if you don't really have an experience of seeing Asian languages before, they can look very similar, definitely. But I would say that for the most part, that is confined to written Japanese.
And while we're on this kind of subject of the written language, if you look at Japanese, you'll find some things which, in a sentence, you'll find some of the characters which look very much like Chinese characters, looking like pictures. And then you will, you know, in other parts of the sentence, you will see kind of squiggles mixed in with all of that kind of thing. So, I mean, can you sort of give us a basic overview about how the Japanese written language works?
Okay, so there are three different writing systems in Japanese, two of which are kana, and those are hiragana and katakana. So hiragana is kind of the bread and butter of the Japanese language. It gives you the grammatical particles, it gives you verb endings, things that kind of give you information above the Chinese characters. And then you have katakana, which is generally used for foreign words. So foreign names like Kurara for Clara or Matto for Matt would be written in katakana. And then the third one, and obviously the most difficult for a Western learner of Japanese, is kanji. Those are the Chinese characters, and they provide meaning to Japanese, kind of like in nouns and in verbs. They kind of provide the actual meaning of sentences.
So, I mean, it is an interesting language to learn about, really, when you consider that, you know, we've got one writing system here in English, which is the A to Z alphabet. Chinese has one writing system, which is the Chinese characters. Japanese has actually got three. So that's a very, very interesting point about Japanese. Now, as of last week, we did start this show, and in the middle of it, we had a song. Last week, we heard the beautiful song Shijian Douqu Nala. And this week, we're going to have a song by a singer called Pu Shu, and it is called Pingfan Zhulu, which means The Road to Ordinary. Now, after this, we will be talking about some amusing kind of aspects about Chinese, more about how the Chinese culture influences the language and how cultural differences make it difficult to learn, and also a little bit about the dialects of Chinese. But before that, this is Pingfan Zhulu by Pu Shu.
Oh, 沸腾着的不安着的，你要去哪 via via， 谜样的沉着的故事，你真的在听吗？我曾经跨过山和大海，也穿过人山人海，我曾经拥有着的一切转眼都飘散如烟，我曾经失落失望失掉所有方向，直到看见平凡才是唯一的答案。
That was Ping Fan Zhulu by Pu Shu. And you are listening to A Glimpse of China on Leeds Student Radio with me, your host, Matt. And today we are having a show about the Chinese language. We have two students here who are studying Chinese at the University of Leeds, Clara and Niall. And so far we've talked about how the Chinese written language works. And also we've talked about differences between Japanese and Chinese. So welcome back to you to listen to this show. And just a few more questions about the Chinese language and your experience of learning it in general. Open to either of you, Clara or Niall. So is there anything that you've found sort of particularly amusing about learning Chinese? Sort of any amusing phrases or anything like that?
I've got a couple of funny phrases, things that I think I can use a lot in my daily life. For example, the phrase 跑转阴雨, which literally means throwing a brick to attract jade. And of course, when you hear the literal meaning, you think, what could that possibly mean? But actually, it means if you make kind of a subpar suggestion to a group of friends, and then they will come back with something better. That's the idea of 跑转阴雨. It's deliberately giving something kind of a bit boring or a bit bad, and then hoping to get something back in return that's a lot better. Another one of my favourite phrases is 画蛇添足, which is literally drawing a snake and then adding feet, which literally means to overdo something, or, you know, ruin the entire effect of something by just adding something completely useless, which I really love. It's kind of a really great phrase.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, you know, the Chengyu, which you talked about earlier, which are four character phrases, each character having their own separate meaning and then put together to have a completely different meaning. And so we've talked a little bit about how Chinese culture influences the language there. But would you say, either of you, that cultural differences make learning the language difficult in any way?
It's both difficult and beautiful, because you learn so much more than just the language. You learn so much more about the culture, obviously only if you go deeper into it and actually bother to find out the meaning of the Chengyu. You could just be like, okay, so these four characters mean separately seen this. If you put them together, they have this sort of phrase meaning. But it's, I just always find it really interesting to go to the bottom of the story and see where it actually derives from.
Also, what I find kind of confusing in Chinese, especially while I was in China, some of my friends would greet me with 吃饭了吗, which is, you know, have you eaten yet? And I understood that this was kind of a general greeting, because Chinese culture is definitely very focused around food. And I feel that this is definitely a way in which Chinese culture has very strongly affected the language. But the problem for me was I never knew how to respond, because I'm not a big person who eats breakfast, so I didn't want to worry them by saying no. Like, you know, when my Chinese friends ask me 吃饭了吗, all I can think of is yes. Did you? So it's something that you're not really taught how to respond to. You understand what it means and the significance behind it, but not exactly how to cope with it.
But then again, if I can just swing it to the English language, you also greet yourself by saying how do you do, and you don't necessarily reply to that, because it's not always a genuine question. You just want to kind of say hello. However, in China, you also ask the question, oh, 你回来了吗? Which means, have you come back? But obviously, if I'm standing right in front of you, yes, I have come back. It's just, again, a sort of meaning to say hi and to express some joy about your return.
I mentioned a little bit earlier about the dialects in Chinese. Mandarin is the official language of mainland China. But also there's a series of dialects. Almost every place in China has its own dialect, which are spoken in the home, not really used in the workplace or in schools, but certainly within, you know, among families and friends from the same area. So have either of you, Clara or Niall, had any experience of the dialects? And what do you think of them in comparison to Mandarin?
Well, Niall and I have both studied Cantonese for half a semester. What do you think? Is Cantonese in any kind similar to Mandarin?
Yeah, I mean, I personally thought that there were a few things in Cantonese where you could look at it or hear it and think, okay, I understand where it comes from in Mandarin now. But at the same time, you know, the way that the rest of the sentence is wrapped around it is completely confounding, and it was very difficult to learn for me. Especially because there are more tones in Cantonese than there are in Mandarin. We learned about six. C, 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 C. So it was a lot more difficult. And there are no real Cantonese dictionaries either. Because obviously, like, written Cantonese is functionally the same as Mandarin. But spoken Cantonese is a lot more colloquial, and there's a lot more, like, words that are kind of native to Cantonese that you can't really find the meaning of online or something.
Just some sort of background knowledge as well. Like, Cantonese is spoken in the southern part of China, in Canton. Yeah, that was a surprise. Yeah.
And in Hong Kong and Macau.
Yes, and in Hong Kong and Macau. However, the Cantonese spoken in Hong Kong is very different to the one spoken in mainland China. And I've got friends in Guangzhou, which is the capital of the Guangdong province, which is Canton in Western language. And she just doesn't understand Hong Kong people. She says, can you please, like, write that in Chinese characters? Because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I do find it amazing, actually, how the dialects can differ, and how that, you know, people who are of the same ethnicity and from the same country can have a difficulty in expressing themselves and communicating with one another, particularly those that perhaps haven't had such a great educational background or upbringing, where they've not kind of had the exposure to the actual Mandarin in the sort of countryside where they speak the dialect all the time. So it is fascinating.
But then again, China is a massive country. You can't forget that. Like, it's got an immeasurable size, and I'm not surprised that there are still differences. I mean, obviously there's a concern of the government who just try to get the standard Mandarin into, like, in the education system, like, all the schools are taught in standard Mandarin, but obviously when if you go to rural areas, there's a huge discrepancy and, like, a huge difference.
Right, well, that is all we have time for today. You have been listening to A Glimpse of China with me, your host Matt, and we have had a really good discussion with Clara and Niall, who are students of Chinese at the University of Leeds. Now, do join us next week at 12:30 on Tuesday yet again, where we will have two Chinese students at the university who will be talking about their impressions of the UK and whether the stereotypes about here are true in their eyes. So join us at 12:30 next Tuesday for that. And finally, if you have enjoyed today's show, then don't forget to tweet us at ThisIsLSR stating A Glimpse of China. So that's all we've got time for today. Thanks for listening. Have a good week.